CBS News Brief. Atlanta police say one person is dead after a gunman hijacked a commuter bus. Atlanta Police Chief Darren Sherbaugh.
We currently do have in custody a 39-year-old Joseph Greer. Last known address was Stone Mountain, Georgia.
In another incident, three people shot by a man in downtown Atlanta food court are expected to survive, so is the suspect who was shot by police. In Tennessee, three juveniles and one adult are in critical condition after a shooting in Memphis, after the crash of an officer's vehicle, and then the one the suspect was in, two people are now in custody. President Biden's son Hunter is found guilty on all counts in his federal gun trial. One juror tells CBS News.
Deliberating on this case, I can say the judicial system was very fair.
The U.S. has deployed warships as a Russian fleet makes a close pass of Florida on its way to Cuba and a five-day port visit to Havana. U.S. officials interpret it as Putin's reaction to America's support of Ukraine. CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
To everyone making time for life's best moments, let our team member Sandy share how Culver's is serving up celebration by the scoop.
Our rich and creamy fresh frozen custard makes every day a little bit sweeter. Enjoying a handcrafted treat with all the ooey gooey toppings you love, now that's worth celebrating.
Come to Culver's and let us serve you a sweet treat to make every moment count.
From Wisconsin with love,
welcome to Delicious.
Culver's, 8th Street South, Wisconsin Rapids.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So go back to the beginning. Question, electrocution or shark bite? Evidently, this is the big political question of the day. Thank you, Donald Trump, for bringing this extremely important situation to light. Because evidently, as it's been explained to me, Trump is worried that batteries are going to be put on boats. Boats are going to be heavy. They're going to sink. And then you're going to have to make the choice. Do you grab both terminals and hope for electrocution? Or do you let the shark eat you? Now, the weird thing is, and I don't know that he knows this, but most boats have batteries on them. They're there already. Unless you're paddling. So this idea that something new is coming, kind of frightening. And as I've been saying, look, I see us in a 1980s kind of moment. This is 1980 all over again. Carter comes in, puts solar panels on the White House, says, hey, we're going to move off the dirty stuff. Reagan comes in, rips them off, going back to oil. Trump's telling us what he's going to do. And here to share some thoughts on maybe what that's going to look like and maybe why it's a bad idea, I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it's great to be with you.
So, electric shock or shark? Where do you come down on this extremely important question?
It makes me nostalgic for the days, you know, with both Democratic and Republican administrations when you could disagree with them, but at least it was a fact-based conversation. Mostly, you just had a difference of perspective on this. I mean, some of this stuff makes your jaw drop, right? I mean, first of all, there's lots of heavy stuff on boats already, all right? There's batteries on boats already. And so the idea that somehow, you know, scaling up battery production is going to cause boats to sink and then people to have a choice between either electrocution or getting a shark bite is hysterical and would be really funny were it not coming from someone who is the nominee of a major party for president of the United States. So it reminds me just of the stuff that gets spread around on social media or Facebook about, did you hear this story? Did you hear that story? That has no basis in fact. I just saw something from my hometown where someone was claiming that all the solar panel farms and all the wind turbines going up were creating a magnetic field that was attracting more tornadoes. On what science that is based, I'm not entirely sure.
That makes no sense. Now, I've heard people say, again, much in the same circles that you're in, that the traffic circles that they're putting all over the place, that's what's causing the tornadoes, because we're driving around really fast in circles and we're whipping them up.
Oh, man. If that were the case, England would have a lot of tornadoes because there's nothing but traffic circles there in some towns. And my sense is that they have very few at all. So let's debunk that once and for all. But I think the larger point is that, you know, Trump and others are spewing this nonsense to try to just go back to the way things were, which was they're getting big checks from big oil and, we'll have a fossil fuel based energy economy and we'll ignore all these other challenges out there. Meanwhile, and I think this is important to understand, you know, the battery storage is a critically important issue, no matter what energy source you believe in, okay? Whether it's solar, wind, hydro, coal, natural gas, propane, whatever, because you can store energy that way. And that's really important, for instance, when the power grid goes out. And guess what? That happens a lot because of climate change or stress on it or other factors like that. And so these batteries are becoming more and more important. And this is a true fact, Rick. The scale up that we're seeing globally in battery production is the largest industrial scale up we have seen in industrial history since the building of aircraft during World War II.
Or the space age.
That's how big this is.
Yeah.
And so do we want to be a part of it? Or do we just want to cede it to China, which seems like a terrible idea to me?
No, you're absolutely right. And this is one of those things where, I've asked this question a million times. Can we do great things in this country anymore? You think back to the space race. We did great things. And out of that came, incredible inventions and technological advances and a lot of things that we take for granted today.
Yeah.
When you put that kind of American ingenuity to work, when you put that kind of innovation to work, we can do great things. But it's that fear factor that I keep coming back. And look, we joke about, the shocker shark. We joke about people who believe that windmills cause cancer. We joke about that stuff. But there are people who have internalized it because, look, there's an industry out there based on scaring the you-know-what out of these people so that they act against their own interests. And that, to me, is the most frightening part of all this, is that it seems pretty simple to do because people that I thought were relatively, on some level, not dragging the knuckles, buying this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's illogical, but it says a lot about where people get information and news and how it's vetted. And it also says a lot about what people running for office are willing to say, to draw distinctions or to pander. But I think here is the honest to God truth that we can all believe in, whether we're Democratic, Republican, Independent. And that is that I would much rather America have control over our energy future than either autocrats in the Middle East, which is what you get if you have a fossil fuel economy. I mean, we do make a lot of fossil fuels here, but ultimately OPEC still sets the price there, right? And contributes greatly to the global supply. Or, if we sit on our hands and do nothing, China's going to make all the solar, all the batteries, and we're going to lose more manufacturing jobs, and we're going to do it that way. And I think the right way to do it is to say, look, I am for a lot of different energy sources, whether it's nuclear, solar, wind, hydro, battery storage, natural gas, you name it. Let's do it. But let's make sure it's made in America so that we have control over our energy future and that we're also making the innovations that are going to get us to the next level. And I just want to share this brief story about batteries because I think this is so important. This is based on a Harvard Business School case study. The fact that we lost the toy industry in the United States, where toys were being outsourced to all over Asia, and then they ended up in China, but they started elsewhere in Asia, led to batteries being manufactured in Asia, led to the innovation in batteries occurring in Asia, which left us behind. So the fact that we lost this industry that a lot of people would say, well, that's not very vital to national security. We make toys, right? It turns out that having that a production ecosystem is pretty dang important.
Yeah.
And otherwise, we're borrowing the technology back. All of our, we have to have Asian partners because we literally lost the ability on how to innovate and how to make this stuff. And we're slowly clawing it back. But we can't turn our backs on that now.
No, I mean, you could make the argument the rotary phone. Once we stopped making the rotary phone, that first push button phone, they didn't make here anymore. That transition was somewhere else. And then after that came the cordless phone and the bag phone and eventually the cell phone. And we lost all of those jobs that decades of workers would have benefited from because that one decision to say we're closing down the rotary phone factory and we're going to build the new one or retool the new one somewhere else. We lost all of those jobs. And I would argue the technology and the innovation that went with it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's only the big massive companies that have like $1 trillion in market capitalization. I'm looking at you, Apple, that have figured out how to hack this, how they can design something in California, manufacture something in China. But even Apple's looking at diversifying, and they are making some products back here, and they do have some of the supply chain back here. They've seen some of the challenges with it. But otherwise, you just can't do that. You cannot do that effectively. And the point of that Harvard Business School study is that when you lose the production, you lose the innovation. And when you lose the innovation, you lose the next generation of manufacturing and that technology, which explains why there are exactly zero mass market smartphones that are made in the United States. And you think about it, Rick. I mean, is there a day that goes by where you don't see dozens of smartphones? You know, yourself, me, your friends, your family, your classmates, your work colleagues, people around town. There are so many smartphones out there, and not a single one of them is manufactured in the United States. Yeah. I don't want that to be the case with automobiles or any of the energy sources. I think that would be a huge mistake for our country.
No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, you talk about it, and I've been talking about what you just said for years now. I remember I used to have a friend who was a congressman from Illinois. He came out of the textile industry. He was one of the few union presidents who became a congressman. He said, look, you know, I knew a guy he was a tinkerer. You know, we worked on the floor making suits. The one of the last unionized, I forget the name of Marks something.
Oh, Hart Schaffner Marks.
There you go. Yeah. That's it. He worked for them, and this guy was a tinkerer. He went home in his garage, and he got one of the old machines from work, figured out how to make chips using the sewing machine method to be able to implant stuff in there just by going in his garage and fiddling around. Made a huge amount of money. But you know, if you don't have that suit factory, if you don't have that rudimentary job that makes somebody go, hey, I can use this application somewhere else, maybe you don't get that next innovation.
Yeah. Well, that is exactly the case. And we have industry after industry where that has occurred. And one of the most striking examples to me was that, and you know this because I think you're from Ohio, Toledo used to be the glass capital of the world, right? And the glass industry in Ohio just got totally decimated by competition from China, dumping subsidies, government control, all of that. Lost so much of it. The glass museum in Toledo, some of the glass panels there, they had to have, guess what? You know, shipped over from China to do it. And it's just like, really, you know, that's not where we want to end up as a country. I think it's worth fighting for these industries. And it does take, you know, it takes a rational conversation that's fact-based, first of all, but then it takes the policies. It takes the investment, the innovation, the industrial policy. It takes the trade policy, and what we don't need is the kind of nonsense that having more batteries is going to sink ships, and you get to choose between two awful deaths. That's ridiculous.
But the part here that I want to go back to, because I think this is the important part of all of this, to boil all this down, Trump basically said over the weekend, it all ends if he becomes president. This is why I say, look, I look at 1980. You know, Reagan ran on, you know, drill, baby, drill. Carter was saying, hey, let's put solar panels on things. That moment was a defining moment in this country because we've been on the dirty oil ever since. I see us in the same kind of, it's time to decide which side are you on? And Trump is telling us all of this innovation, all of this excitement around EVs and battery technology and the future, he's against and he will destroy. So for me, the simple question is this what we want? Is this the country we want for the next 40, 50 years, being dependent on OPEC and other hostile nations?
Yeah, I just want to say this because we're nonpartisan. We don't endorse, but we obviously do look at policies that that the presidents and the candidates put out there, and we see what works. And here's what I know. And look, I'm a tariff hawk. I am not afraid to suggest applying tariffs. And obviously, neither is Donald Trump, and neither is Joe Biden. Tariffs alone are not going to bring back American manufacturing, full stop. It takes more than that. It takes investing in workers. It takes investing in innovation. It takes an industrial policy. It takes putting real money on the table. It means investing in those cutting edge industries in addition to the tariffs. And if your policy is simply going to roll back the investments, going to have $4 trillion worth of corporate tax cuts, is going to maintain some tariffs, and then who knows, maybe make a deal with China because he did the first time, that is not going to bring American manufacturing jobs back to the United States of America.
No, I'm right there with you. It's an amazing moment in where we find ourselves. And as I said, you know, this election is going to be very, very telling for the future because I fear all of this innovation goes away. Now, one of the other claims Trump made was that, you know, all of these EVs and all of this stuff is going to be made in China. We're just making China rich. We have the ability to make sure that that doesn't happen, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and again, you know, there's 100% tariffs in place on EVs coming from China, which is going to, you know, if there's any coming over right now, and there's just what I would call a trickle, I mean, it is barely perceptible in the market. That's going to stop. That's going to totally dry up. And it's not to say they won't try to find other ways into the U.S. market, but I would say this administration, the Congress, are pretty keen on making sure that doesn't happen. But EVs, look, there is eventually going to be more uptake of these as there's more charging, as the price come down and all of that. And people are going to like not having to pay for gas. You know, they're just going to like that. And so these are going to come online, and it may take 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And the only question is, are we going to be making them here, or are we going to be importing them from another country? And unless we have a policy that says we're going to make them here, then they're going to come from somewhere else. And so it's just wrong to say that if we invest in these industries, that China is going to get a lot of the benefits. In fact, that is pretty much the opposite of what this administration's industrial policies are trying to do.
Well, again, we'll see. But again, back to the main question, shocker shark. That's the important thing today.
Somehow, I guess if you get the shark to bite the battery, kind of like the dude from Jaws got the oxygen tank.
There you go.
That's all I can think of. That's my hack there, Rick.
I like it. Scott, as always, great stuff.
All right. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Our good friend, Scott Paul. Check out their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. I want to hear your thoughts. Shocker shark or the third option. Maybe the shark bites the battery. If we're living in fantasy land, why not? Quick break, right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1969. That was the day that labor leader John L. Lewis died. Born to a Welsh-American coal mining family in Iowa, Lewis became the leading champion of industrial unionism in the 1930s. He served as president of the United Mine Workers of America from 1920 until 1960. He was the founder of the Congress of Industrial Organizations. The CIO split off from the American Federation of Labor with the aim of organizing the thousands of workers who powered the U.S. industrial machine. Some public officials and the media accused the CIO of being infiltrated with communism. In 1937, Lewis delivered a speech in Washington, D.C. to deny these claims. The speech captured Lewis's commitment and passion for industrial labor organizing. He declared, quote, "The workers of the nation were tired of waiting for corporate industry to right their economic wrongs, to alleviate their social agony, and to grant them their political rights. Despairing of fair treatment, they resolved to do something for themselves. They therefore have organized a new labor movement conceived within the principles of the National Bill of Rights and committed to the proposition that the workers are free to assemble in their own forms, voice their own grievances, declare their own hopes, and contract on even terms with modern industry for the sale of their only material possession, their labor." He went on to say, quote, "Under the banner of the Committee of Industrial Organization, American labor is on the march. Its objectives today are those it had in the beginning, to strive for the unionization of our unorganized millions of workers and for the acceptance of collective bargaining as a recognized American institution."
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, Scott got me thinking about, I remember reading a book years ago. In fact, you know, we had the author on for like its 25th anniversary or something not too long ago. It was called America, What Went Wrong? And they talked about, you know, the fact that the rotary phone, because we used to make all phones in this country, understand, much like the toy industry. I remember as a kid, every toy that I had made in the U.S., made in East Brattleboro, Vermont, or one of the places up in Massachusetts. But they were all made here in the U.S. And, you know, the guy told the story about, you know, how 6,000 workers in Chicago lost their jobs making the rotary phone. And when they came in with the push button phones, they decided that that factory should be somewhere else. They wanted to break the union. They wanted to lower costs because they could raise profits. And then all of that innovation that came afterwards, you know, from the push button phone to the cordless phone to eventually the beginnings of a cell phone, the big giant bag we used to carry around to the flip thing to eventually where we are now with this smartphone. All of those technological gains and the jobs that came with producing those somewhere else. And that's one industry. The toy industry, something else. Bicycles, same thing. You go down this list of industry after industry that communities across this country lost. It's not just that we lost the capacity to build some toys or bikes or phones or any of this stuff, but communities lost jobs. Communities lost the driver of their economy. And families took the hit. Which is why we're in the situation that we're in now. And this is, look, understand, this is Democrats and Republicans at fault here. This is neoliberalism run amok. This is deference to corporate America and the need to save capitalism and all that nonsense rhetoric. It's all part of that. And who took it on the chin? Working people. Which is why in this transition that we're seeing from, you know, gas-powered engines to electric batteries for cars and this move away from dirty oil, it's my hope that this transition is the first, at least in my lifetime, if not the history of humanity, that workers take it on the chin. Maybe we don't get screwed this time. Maybe workers actually do benefit from the start. And for me, I like the guy who's in the White House right now, even if his approval ratings are at the lowest that they've been, because here's a guy who's doing all the things that we said we wanted done. When Donald Trump talked about reshoring manufacturing, everyone's like, yes, yes. Biden's actually doing it. And nobody knows about it. Again, our corporate-controlled media. When people said, hey, we should be rebuilding our infrastructure, it's a disgrace that we have such bad infrastructure. It's a disgrace. Tom Friedman's. I went from Beijing to LAX, and it was like going from the from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. We used to, at least I think I want to believe, we fought for better. We innovated at home. We invested at home. There's a guy who's trying to do that. And at every step of the way, the Republicans have been in the way. And this is where we have to take a collective breath and look at reality. One guy talks about it. One guy does it. I've always been someone who believes I want the guy who does it. I want people of action. Trump's got lots of words. In fact, he'll tell you they're the best words. Small number of best words, but he's got them. The other guy, not so many words, but some great actions. Yeah, I'm driving down the highway and I see signs brought to you by the Invest in America, brought to you by the infrastructure bill. I look at, the factories being built, brought to you by the CHIPS Act. We're reshoring things for national security purposes, yes, but also for community success, for employee success. Scott has told that story about the glass factory in China, and I've been telling that since 2013. When we went on our labor history tour and ended up in Toledo and wanted to talk about the history of glass and the glassmakers unions and the jobs and the fights for good wages and all of that, only to find ourselves at that museum asking the question, well, who made all this glass? Where did it come from? Well, we know where it came from. It came from China. And that's the sad reality of the policies that we've allowed to have happen. And it's all been because, well, we're swayed easily by what corporate America feeds us. We're swayed easily by the corporate-controlled media. We're swayed easy by a powerful right-wing media who keeps feeding us division and anger and all of that. Maybe that's the problem. Or is it we don't want to think that we have the power to change things? I'm hoping we find that power again, because this election matters. There is a possibility that Donald Trump wins, could potentially maintain the House and win the Senate. And all of the horrible that people have been afraid of, getting rid of Social Security, getting rid of Medicare, destroying all of the social safety net that's left, destroying unions, firing all the public sector workers and bringing in good loyalists, actually weaponizing government. This stuff, very real. So the question is, again, the old labor frame, which side are you on? Do we want to give fascism a try? Is that the goal? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Something I said made you think, got under your skin, made you mad. I want to hear it. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any of the show? Podcast. Also freespeech.org. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app. This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Multiple shootings. We begin in Memphis, Tennessee, where three juveniles and one adult are in critical condition after a shooting followed by a police chase in which an officer ended up crashing a squad. And as Memphis police spokesman Lieutenant Lewis Brownlee explains,
the suspect wrecked out. After a brief foot pursuit, two individuals were detained. The cause of the initial shooting is undetermined at this time. The investigation is ongoing.
In downtown Atlanta, police responded to a shooting at a food court.
I was walking down the street, and next thing you know, pow, 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 pow.
Atlanta police say three people were injured in the shooting in the shopping center's food court, and the suspect was also shot. Police say all the injured were taken to hospitals, alert, conscious, and breathing. A woman could be seen in a wheelchair being taken to an ambulance.
That's CBS's Michael Toscano reporting. Atlanta police also say a man with a gun hijacked a bus and forced the driver to lead officers in a wild and lengthy chase. One person on the bus died and a suspect is in custody. The U.S. deploys warships as a Russian fleet makes a close pass of Florida. CBS's David Martin.
U.S. Navy ships have been shadowing a small Russian flotilla as it makes its way across the Atlantic toward Cuba. The Navy ships, including two destroyers and two vessels equipped with towed sonars for tracking the submarine, will remain offshore and resume tracking the Russian flotilla once the port call in Havana ends. David Martin, CBS News, Washington.
Federal immigration agents arrest eight people with suspected ties to ISIS. Officials tell CBS News the individuals were from Tajikistan and apparently crossed the U.S.-Mexico border. CBS's Errol Barnett.
At this moment, they are detained and have been charged with immigration offenses and are waiting extradition back to Tajikistan. But it's an effort by the U.S. government to demonstrate now that it is successfully keeping an eye on potential terror plots. And there was no active plot that they are alleged to have been a part of, but they are keeping their eyes on this very closely as it impacted three major cities.
Arrests in New York, Philadelphia, and Los Angeles. Hunter Biden is found guilty of lying about his drug use on a federal gun purchase form, CBS's Weijia Zhang.
Although Hunter Biden faces up to 25 years in prison, that is unlikely for a first-time offender. The judge did not set a date for the sentencing, but said it's usually about 4 months from the verdict, putting it just weeks from the November election.
Paramount's merger talks with Skydance have apparently ended. National Amusements Incorporated, the majority voting shareholder of Paramount Global, which is CBS's parent company, says they have not been able to reach mutually acceptable terms. This is CBS News.
Sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your family, your phone, and your furry friends with life, electronic device, and pet health insurance.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Brian, do you buy your tickets on Ticketmaster?
Whether I want to or not, I do.
Bella DeVan. We're going to talk a little bit about monopolies.
Live Nation and Ticketmaster together control 80% of the primary ticketing market. They have the market power to bully people into submission. And then you trap consumers into basically having to pay like junk fees that are basically created to create profit for the company.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4. On